Welcome to the Christchurch London podcast. This is a talk from our Sutton service. To find out about upcoming talks at each of our services, or to listen to other talks, please visit christchurchlondon.org.
Awesome. How's everyone doing? You guys ready? We're going to go in the deep end. My name is Alonzo. All my friends call me Zo. So you're so welcome to call me Zo. And I felt so at home here. Not only are you all just such lovely hosts, like Mike was getting me water and chatting with me, and they were showing me the bathroom and showing me where you guys do kids ministry, where there was pole dance studio thing. Like, how crazy is that? When he told me that at first, I was like, what kind of church is this? Y'all need Jesus. But it was amazing, and they do kids ministry. What a redemptive way of using that space and using it for Jesus in the kingdom. So that was so awesome. And then I started getting a little chilly here, and I'm from Canada, so I felt even more at home because it was a little bit cold. It's very cold where I'm from. The day my wife and I got married, my wife, her name is Khadija. She's the most beautiful thing God ever made. And it was minus 40 degrees Celsius on our wedding day. Even Jesus didn't want to come out. It was so cold. And so, I felt so at home here. I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. This is going to be a good time. Awesome. So let's dive right into it, shall we? So today's topic is the most difficult objection there is to Christianity, to theism in general, but Christianity specifically. And it's the question, why does a loving God allow suffering and injustice? And I want to just make two remarks. Okay, so the PowerPoint's point's working. Great. Does anybody know who that is on the painting? Anyone want to take a guess? It's a biblical character. The woman is really famous in the Bible. Her name is Hagar. And you should read her story in Genesis. She's a very important voice within the biblical story. I want to start with making two acknowledgments as we begin. And I just want to put a little warning out there. This could be triggering for some people, but I'll be gentle. First, the topic of suffering for many of us isn't a theoretical question. It is a felt reality. And if that's true of you, may I just start out by saying that I see you. And my heart and my prayers go out to you specifically. And I'm so sorry for what you've been through. And you might object already and say, Zo, man, bro, you have no idea what I've been through. And you know what? You're right. I don't. Suffering is so complicated. And I wouldn't try to insult you by saying that I understand what you're going through or what you have been going through. And let me just say that let this talk be a first step in your healing journey. And if you do need help, so the next slide, please ask for help. That slide, you can take a screenshot of that for yourself or for a neighbor or a friend. It's a habit of mine to make these sorts of resources available, and you can holler at me afterwards and I can give that to you personally as well. There are people that are willing to walk with you through suffering. And second, I want to be sensitive to another heartbreaking fact. That for some of us here today, we haven't just been hurt by anybody. We've been hurt by the church. That we've been hurt by Christians. I was in London a few years ago, and I was speaking on this very topic, and I had a young guy come up to me. He was 15 years old. And he said to me, thank you for the talk. I have a question for you. 5 years ago, my mom was diagnosed with cancer and she didn't make it. I went to my local church and I had a very simple question. Why? And you know what they told him? I'll never forget what they said. I wrote it down. Quote, the reason your mom died of cancer was because you had more faith in your mom than in God. Let's not mince words. That's not biblical. That's not Christian. That is emotional, psychological, spiritual abuse, and it's wrong. Full stop, no excuses. And if you're one of those folks that have heard such nonsense, let me be somebody that says that that's wrong. And I am so profoundly sorry that you heard something like that. My wife and I just got out of a season of spiritual abuse and betrayal. And to be perfectly honest with you, we're still recovering. It was one of the most traumatizing things that we had ever been through. And this naturally just brings me to the question at hand this morning. The pain is real. The suffering is real. The injustices are real. But is God? I mean, just think about it. Next slide, please. The war in the Ukraine, human trafficking, racial injustice like George Floyd, slavery, poverty, all sorts of abuses, especially towards women and girls. World wars, including atrocities like the Holocaust. And we can feel this even more when we look at specific cases of suffering and injustice. So a few years ago, I used to work in Toronto, Canada, and we had an art exhibit that we were hosting in our office. It was entitled Beautiful by an artist named Craig Hawkins, who partnered with a humanitarian organization in India called Agni Raksha. And the partnership was in order to raise awareness and funds for women who had suffered in the horrific practice of bride burning. Next slide, please. So in southern India, in southern Asia, thousands of women every single year are burned either as a result of some domestic violence act or because they didn't have the sufficient funds in order to pay the dowry that was required by the groom's family. And so this is what happens. They'll either take some cheap, accessible acid and throw it on some of these women, disfiguring them, or they'll take kerosene and literally pour it on them, take a match and burn them alive. And what makes matters worse is that in this some of these countries is the legal system. And so far too often these perpetrators never face justice. Some of the perpetrators will either pay off the police or they'll just run. And some of these women are either too poor or too frightened to pursue justice. So again, as one listens to stories like these specifically, the question just screams out at us. Why on earth would God allow such suffering and injustice? As a couple of my favorite philosophers, Kendrick Lamar and The Weeknd, once said, tell me, who's going to save me from this hell? Who's going to pray for me? Take my pain from me. Save my soul from me, because I'm all alone, you see. And whether you believe in God this morning or you don't believe in God this morning, everyone collides with the question of suffering, this reality, this problem, the problem of suffering. And so, as you may know, in our culture, they use the problem of suffering in order to try to disprove the existence of God. Does that make sense? And so here's the big idea. So this is where we're gonna think deep just for a few minutes. And this is, I think, going to really help you think through the problem that I've just began to lay out. And then after we do this deep thinking, we're going to look at the Christian response to the problem. And it's going to be awesome. I'm going to enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it too. So here's the big idea from the problem of suffering, that it's impossible. So next slide. Thank you, sir. That it's impossible for God and suffering to coexist. And let's just say suffering includes evil and injustice, okay? So the argument looks like this on the next slide. If God is all-powerful and all-loving, then he wouldn't allow suffering. But suffering exists. Therefore, God must not exist. Next slide, here's why. Since God is all-powerful, then he should be powerful enough to stop it. And number two, since God is all loving, then he should be loving enough to want to stop it. Have you heard of this problem before? Vaguely from movies and yeah, okay, great. Speaking very honestly, I think somebody in the throngs of suffering and hurt, I think it's very understandable that they could arrive at such conclusions. But as we explore the question, have you ever thought, what does it mean if the problem is true, the one I just laid out? What does it mean exactly if God doesn't exist? And would God not existing, for example, resolve the problems of suffering and injustice that we see in our world? And the answer seems to be, well, no. God not existing doesn't resolve as much as somebody may hope that it would resolve, because you're still faced with the reality of it in our world, and that is a critical point to realize. And with all due respect, I think it actually makes things worse. How, you might ask? Thank you for asking. If the problem of suffering is true, then writers like the atheist Richard Dawkins from Oxford University is correct in his conclusions. He writes this: in a universe of blind physical forces, at bottom there's no evil, no good, only pitiless indifference. No evil. Just think about that for a minute. Think about the horrors of bride burning and bullying and racism and human trafficking. Deep on the inside, we protest that these are absolutely evil. They're unjust. And it's not a matter of opinion. Like, does cream go on first before jam? It's a matter of fact. That's the protest that we have deep on the inside. And then there's also something deep on the inside that rebels against writers like Susan Blackmore, who once said in an interview about the tragedies in our world, my response is that nothing matters. It's all empty and meaningless. This is just the way the world is. Get used to it. Now think with me for a moment. Can you imagine how dehumanizing something like that is to, say, a survivor at Auschwitz, to say it's all empty and meaningless? Or how devaluing it would be to say to that same person, nothing matters? Or how decomforting it is when someone is forced to get used to it, because there's no hope of ultimate justice. And here's the point. Yes, an Auschwitz survivor has difficult questions for God, but I think that even more difficult questions arise if there is no God. And so we've looked at the problem, we've defined it, and we looked at what if it means, like, what does it mean exactly if it's true? Now we have to ask the next logical question, which is it true? And so in the philosophy of religion, that's the academic discipline that examines this problem in depth, the problem that I presented to you is actually what they call a defeated argument. So by that they mean that both atheists, so people that don't believe in God, as well as people that believe in God, think that this argument isn't actually true. And the way that they defeated this argument is they identified what they call hidden assumptions. Bet you didn't think you would hear about this in church this morning. I will blast through this, but this is actually really important to think about, and I want to introduce it to you. So out of the many hidden assumptions that the problem of suffering has, here are just two really important ones. It's really great to have in your back pocket as you're having a discussion with your friends about something like this. So the first hidden assumption is this, that since God is all-powerful, he could just create any world that he wants, maybe one without evil and suffering. Have you ever thought about it like that? Like, couldn't God just make the world different? Well, their answer would be, not necessarily. Love is what makes life worth living. And love is God's aim for all creation. For love to exist, freedom exists. And if we are free, then evil and justice and suffering are all possibilities. The number two, the second hidden assumption is this, is that, and that isn't it possible for an all-loving God to have some moral reason or good reason for him allowing suffering? They'll say, gosh, you know, God couldn't have a good reason for allowing all of these sorts of things. So the problem with that position is that it's impossible to defend. How on earth can one claim that they know, in the technical sense of know, that God has no reason for allowing the things that he does? He could have one really good reason, or he could have 17,083 good reasons, or he could have a trillion reasons. Now, on the next slide, there are lots of reasons presented to us by the Bible and by philosophers and theologians and so on. And I can't get into all of them right now. You could ask me about them afterwards, but I just need you to hear me very clearly at this point. I am not saying that any of these sorts of reasons, like character development is on there, for example. I know it's a little hard to read. I'm not saying that any of those reasons are why you're going through what you're going through. I'm not saying that at all. What these really quick hidden assumptions that I showed you do is show that it is possible for God to also exist even though we see evil and suffering and injustice in our world. That's what it accomplished. Now, if you're thinking about this and you're following along, the next question would be, now, if God does exist, where is he? Where is he in all of the suffering and pain and injustices? What does Christianity have to say about all of this? And this was the second half that I mentioned earlier. It says actually a lot about the problem. Just very quickly, next slide is God's design and his reign on the world is one of goodness and beauty and truth and justice and life. And human rebellion ushers in this epoch, this time of evil and ugliness and falsehood and hate and injustice and death. So in the Bible's story, there is an accounting, a theological accounting of the way the reason why the world is so broken in the way that it is right now. But even if there is such an accounting, I think we're all still wondering in the heart of hearts, if God exists, where is he then still? My brother, his name was Andrew. And Andrew, back in 2017, we found out that he had cancer. It was in the colon. It metastasized to his liver and to his lungs. And cancer is just the worst. I just hate it so much. And I still remember the first few rounds of his cancer treatment. And I was talking to him one day on the phone after he had just gotten out of an operation. And I asked him, Andrew, bro, you're in so much pain right now. You're suffering. I can't imagine what you're going through, bro. When you're just sitting there and you're thinking about your life, I asked him, aside from being cured, when you're really in pain, what's the thing that you want most? Have you ever thought about it like that? What's the thing you want most? I'll never forget his response. His response was to not be alone. And isn't that true? Some of you know the power of somebody saying, I'm here. You will all remember in 2020, Chadwick Boseman, he also passed away from a very similar sort of cancer. Or more recently, Her Majesty passed away. And in both of those cases, people around the globe began posting their condolences and these tributes and quotes and pictures and all sorts of things. And let me ask you a question. When people are posting like that, what are they trying to communicate to the grieving families? Yes, they're showing love. But there's something more deep. There's something more fundamental, something more meaningful that is happening when they're posting that way. And what they're doing when they're posting that way is showing that these grieving families, that they're not alone in their pain, that their suffering hasn't gone unnoticed, that we care deeply about what they're going through, that they're seen, that they're loved, that they're valued. By posting, people enter. By choosing to enter into their suffering, what they're doing is actually saying, I'm here. And that is exactly what God did when God entered the world of suffering through the person of Jesus. Where is God in suffering and injustice? The biblical answer, the unique response to the Christian worldview is Emmanuel, God with us in our hurt. That's the whole point of the doctrine of the incarnation. And just think about what that means on the next slide. Think about what this means. When you read the gospel, this is such a trip. Like I only became a Christian when I was 21. So like this is still fresh in my mind. And like this is God in human form on earth. And we get to read how he responds to specific instances of suffering and injustice and evil. And you could read, I only posted up 7 up here, but to a mom who lost her son, you can read about. To a pair of sisters who lost their brother. To those who were rejected by society and religion. To those possessed by evil. To those contributing to systemic institutional oppression. To the sick, to the poor, to the violent. And what does God think? What does God think about evil and suffering and injustice? He hates it. And what's even more fascinating is that God enfleshed Jesus Christ. He doesn't run away from, but runs toward. He runs toward those sufferers, and he meets those people with compassion, with healing, a redirection towards the good and towards the just, and with tears. As the brilliant author, Rebecca McLaughlin, summarizes, Jesus weeps with us as we weep. And you see, Jesus doesn't only understand our hurt by observation alone. No, when you read the Gospels, we read how God deeply suffers too. We read how he experienced what it's like to be a refugee. We read how he experienced poverty and hunger and thirst, societal and religious rejection, personal encounters with evil. We read how he experienced psychological, physical, and sexual trauma as they force him to tear off his clothes publicly and is naked before the creation that he clothed. He experienced abandonment. He suffered an unjust trial and ultimately torture and death on the cross. You know, when we're really in pain, the only people who can really speak to us are those who have gone through it too. And Jesus has earned that right to speak to every bleeding heart. I'm going to close with a story. You remember how I mentioned this art gallery. So one day, a guy came in. His name was Nawid. And he came in because he wanted to look at the various paintings and photographs of these women. And on the next slide, these are some of the artworks that were produced in order to raise funds and awareness for this really horrific stuff. And we were touring around the office, and we ended with my very favorite piece. It's with a bunch of these women laughing and smiling together. It's a photograph. And he asked me this story. He asked me this question. He said, do these women live in a community together? And I said, I don't know, but I'm curious, Nawid. Why are you asking? And I'll never forget what he said. Quote, I suspect they do, because it is only those with scars that can possibly understand the scars of others. Only those with scars that can possibly understand the scars of others. I said to him, Nawid, we come from completely different worldviews. But the beauty and the power of the gospel is that at the center of it is not an unscathed God, but a scarred one. And as I was walking him out of the office, I said, Nawid, I love your name. What does it mean? He says, it's Arabic. I said, what does it mean in Arabic? It means good news. Listen, even though we may not know every reason for every situation of suffering and injustice, the person of Jesus means that the answer to today's question cannot be because God does not care. He cares deeply. He cares so deeply about your hurt. For God so loved the world that he gave his son. If he didn't care, he would not have come. He would not have become the scarred God. And as I close and invite the band up, I just want to bring it full circle. What about the women who suffered those injustices? If Jesus, you got to hear me very closely here. This is very important. If Jesus only suffered, then Jesus is only comfort. Does that make sense? If Jesus only suffered, then he is only comfort. The reason why Jesus is the source of hope for Christians globally and for those women is because of his resurrection. For resurrection means injustice will not have the final word. That even if the men who burned those women in India escaped justice now, they won't in the end. And that's true of your story too. Because Jesus lives and was not swallowed up by the horrors that he experienced and in the injustices and the pain, we can be certain that the victims of injustice will not be either. And that goes for your pain as well. That you won't be swallowed up by your hurt because Jesus wasn't swallowed up by his. And in the end, Jesus promises to every bleeding heart, mine included, is that every wrong will be righted. And our finite suffering, as horrible as it is, our finite suffering will be swamped by infinite joy. Amen.